Election Day 2018 is fast approaching. The voter registration deadlines come sooner than the votes, obviously. In Oregon, you've got 13 days from today to get registered to vote in this election. In California, you've still got 3 weeks. And by the way, California just reported a record number of registered voters. Today, we focus on SAPs or SAPOs, Second Amendment Protection Ordinances. These are local votes on ordinances supporting gun ownership, often with language that at least implies negating state laws and efforts to regulate guns. Jackson County's version of a SAPO is Measure 15181, the Right to Bear Arms Amendment. A while back, we talked to supporters of such amendments. Today, we hear from Penny Okamoto, who's the executive director of Ceasefire Oregon. Thanks for joining us once again, Penny.
Jeffrey, thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
The name should be self-explanatory, but would you lay out a bit of a vision for what Ceasefire Oregon is all about?
Sure. Thank you very much. And you really hit the nail on the head. Ceasefire Oregon is really just about stopping violence, in particular stopping gun violence.
And are you about gun registration, for example?
General registration, no. So registration right now occurs when people buy firearms that are protected under the National Firearms Act. And that would include what we broadly call fully automatic weapons. And they're highly regulated. Not only are they registered, but there are other ways to regulate those particular firearms. And as most people don't even realize that fully automatic firearms are still available for purchase or for possession. And people will also note that you don't hear of fully automatic firearms being used in crimes anymore. And registration is one of those reasons. And it's not just the registration process. It's also the process of a very thorough background check. So Ceasefire Oregon would support registration of what we are calling assault weapons. These are going to be semi-automatic firearms that have particular features. So not just any semi-automatic firearm, but semi-automatic firearms with particular features. And yes, we would like to have those particular firearms registered, but not all semi-automatics, nothing that is not a, if it's not an assault weapon, it doesn't need to be registered.
So in other words, no registration for semi-automatic handguns. Semi-automatic meaning, of course, you pull the trigger, a bullet comes out.
Right, exactly. And that's really kind of the biggest difference between semi-automatic and fully automatic. Semi-automatic, you pull the trigger, a bullet comes out. Fully automatic, you just keep your finger down on the trigger and the bullets just continue to come out. Bump stocks, of course, are products that can turn a semi-automatic into a fully automatic, but we're not really going to be talking about that in connection with the SAPs.
All right. So the registration of assault weapons is what you're about. And we're talking about the longer stock, the longer barrel, that sort of thing?
Basically, yes. So so it's going to be a semi-automatic, but it's going to be able to, one of the biggest things is that it doesn't have the capacity to take a large capacity magazine. And in this particular case, a large capacity magazine would be something that holds more than 10 rounds of ammunition. Now, in the state of, and there are other features too, like, you know, does it have a barrel shroud? Does it have a thumb stock? Does it have a forward pistol grip? All those things. Does it have a bayonet, for example? The bayonet is pretty self-explanatory about why that's pretty bad. But the other features simply make it easier for the shooter to control a firearm while shooting, you know, a large number of people, unfortunately. And also, I want to get back to the high-capacity magazine. Mm-hmm. So in the state of Oregon, most hunters know that when you're hunting in Oregon, if you're hunting large game like an elk, hunters are limited to 5 rounds in the magazine. And actually, if you're hunting birds, you're limited to fewer rounds. It's just more humane and gives the elk a chance. But if you're not hunting a large elk or large game, then there's no regulation. And, you know, we've seen, obviously, through whether it's the Dark Knight shooting or the Las Vegas shooting or the Sandy Hook shooting, people who come in with high capacity magazines can obviously kill a lot of people in a very short period of time. And as a matter of fact, the Journal of American Medical Association just came out with a report that was actually printed again in the September 11th, 2018 issue of Scientific American, showing that when high-capacity magazines and actually assault weapons are used in a crime, people are twice as likely to be killed or injured. So they kill and injure people pretty quickly, which is why we're so concerned about them.
All right, so a lot of this about magazines. So, you mentioned registration for fully automatics, some for... we're talking about assault weapons as well in the magazines. Now, are you about any gun confiscation? I mean, this always comes up, it seems like, anytime we start talking about any sort of gun regulation, that the concept of the government coming to take away my guns ends up on the table quickly. Do you support any sort of confiscation like that?
As long as people can legally have guns, no, we don't support confiscation. And, you know, I've been doing this for 18 years, and I've been hearing for 18 years, the government's coming for your guns, the government's coming for your guns, Obama's going to come for your guns. It's never happened. It's never happened. It's not... There are 393 million guns in the United States alone. How is the government supposed to come after them? No, it doesn't happen. It's a scare tactic, and it's just a scare tactic that has no basis in fact whatsoever.
Penny Okamoto, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's the executive director of Ceasefire Oregon. You're hearing her views, or the group's views, on proper regulation of guns in the state of Oregon in the context that we're moving into here of these local Second Amendment protection ordinances, like the one Jackson County is voting on as Measure 15181 in the November election. Your thoughts, your comments, your questions, welcome at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Penny, from your perspective, you mentioned the over the course of the 18 years you've been doing this, you constantly hear, you know, they're going to come for your guns. But from your perspective, then, what has prompted this move for the Second Amendment protection ordinances?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I mean, I think this is just there's a small gun lobby in Oregon. It's small, but it's very vocal. And they're just trying to push back on some of the really very strong, effective firearm safety laws that have been passed really since Sandy Hook. Universal background checks, which requires a background check for almost all firearm sales. It would exclude people who are family members, and those family members include spouses, parents, grandparents, children, nieces, nephews, and the spouse or a partner of that person. So that's a pretty wide view of family, which is fine. Because the law also states that it is a crime to sell or transfer a firearm to someone who the person who's going to be selling or transferring it knows or should know is a prohibited purchaser. So we feel that's a really good law. And the people who are going to be transferring firearms need to go to a federally licensed firearms dealer to make that transfer. There are a few exceptions. There's an exception for people who live a great distance from a federally licensed firearms dealer. But just to give you an idea, there are more federally licensed firearms dealers in Oregon than post offices.
Than what? I'm sorry?
There are more federally licensed firearms dealers in Oregon than there are post offices.
Oh, post offices. Okay.
Right. Exactly. So there are a lot of them. The thing kind of where I think the gun lobby went wrong was that in 2013, there was a bill, SB 700, I believe it was, that actually would have only required a phone call to the Oregon State Police to do a background check. So if someone wanted to do a private sale, all they had to do was call the Oregon State Police, do a background check, it's a $10 fee, that was it. But the gun lobby didn't like that bill, they didn't want that bill, and it was not passed. So in 2015, there was a much stronger bill that was introduced that was passed, and this is now why people who want to transfer or sell a gun on a private sale must actually go to a federally licensed firearms dealer and not only still pay the $10 fee to the Oregon State Police, but also pay the dealer fee on top of that.
And how much is the dealer fee? Do you know?
It depends on the dealer. 20, 30. I've heard up to 50, but that's about what I've heard, around $20, $30.
All right, so the state police background check plus the visit to a dealer.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. It didn't have to be that way, but it was, I think, short-sighted by the gun lobby, but there it is.
All right, so it makes a certain amount of sense then that this is a response to that legislation. Does it surprise you that the response came at the county level rather than at the state level?
No, not at all. Not at all. I think it's sometimes easier for things like SAPs to get passed at the county level. And again, it's people like county commissioners, the county sheriffs, They're beholden to people who elect them, and they want to make sure that the people who are going to be politically active are going to be happy. So, like in Coos County, this was passed by an ordinance in 2016. It's already been laws in other counties. But here's the weird thing. I don't think any SAP has actually been enforced. So we should make clear actually what a SAP does. Has that already been discussed?
No. This is where we're bringing you in to talk about some of the things that SAPs do, because it is really a local effort to say that we're going to provide some resistance to state gun laws.
Right. So it's a lot more than just that, though. So most SAPs, and some of them are a little different, but most of them will actually give the county sheriff the right to interpret parts of the Constitution, the Second, Fourth, and it's usually the Second, Fourth, and Tenth Amendments of the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, as if that county sheriff were a Supreme Court justice. So, you know, of course, most people, you know, really, you know, remember from the high school civics that that can't be done because that actually is against the, it goes against the U.S. Constitution Supremacy Clause. It's Article 6, Section 2 of the U.S. Constitution that states that county and state law cannot supersede federal law. It's just unconstitutional right from the get-go. But another very concerning thing that it does is it actually allows the sheriffs to decide which laws, firearm laws, to not enforce. And again, that goes against laws, including the preemption law, which is the firearm preemption law, which states that it's up to the Oregon State Legislature to determine which laws are enforced or not.
Well, and as you mentioned, I flipped over the Jackson County draft of the ordinance, and there it is in Section 5, Article E. It shall be the duty of the sheriff of Jackson County to determine as a matter of internal policy and county concern whether any federal, state, or local regulation affecting firearms, firearms accessories, and ammunition that is enforceable within his or her jurisdiction violates the Second, Ninth, or Tenth Amendments to the Constitution or Article 1, Section 27 and 33 of the Constitution of the State of Oregon. So, yeah, same sort of thing in this one. The wording seems remarkably consistent from county to county. I was looking at the one that came up in Columbia County, for example. It's pretty much the same thing from place to place, isn't it?
Right. I mean, there are some differences. Some of the older ones might be a little different, but that's because there's basically one organization who's, you know, behind this. They're the Second Amendment Protection Organization. And, you know, they're just trying to get all the counties to do this. And it's, frankly, it's an embarrassment for the counties because it's obviously not lawful. It's foolish. It's going to be struck down. But it also leads to a lot of other kind of scary questions. So on what basis will the sheriff decide to not enforce the law? And for how long will that law not be enforced? Can the sheriff change that law, like from day to day or weekly or high tide, or if the sheriff's friend is involved or not involved? For example, if the sheriff determines that convicted domestic abusers, and we're talking about convicted domestic abusers who are not allowed to have firearms, if the sheriff decides that that law is just not important, what will happen when an abuser actually shoots to death someone who has been abused by that person? Who will then be held accountable? Will the sheriff be held accountable? Will the county be held accountable? I don't really know. And then it also really goes to the center of who has the power to establish, interpret, and enforce laws. I mean, that answer has really already been decided by the United States Constitution, and the power lies within the people to elect officials, including sheriffs. But it also gives the people the right to petition the government to change laws and to expect law enforcement officers to enforce the laws that are set forth by the state and federal legislators. It is not within the power of the sheriff to determine or interpret a law. It is within the power of the sheriff to enforce the law. That's it.
We're talking to Penny Okamoto here on the Jefferson Exchange. She's the executive director of Ceasefire Oregon and stands in opposition to measures like Jackson County Measure 15-181, which is called the Right to Bear Arms Amendment in Jackson County, but in general are fall into the category of SAPs, the Second Amendment Protection Measures, voted on in several places across Oregon. You can join the conversation on the exchange. What's right? What's proper? Is it appropriate for counties to take local votes on potentially negating state and other laws involving gun regulation? Join us on the exchange with your thoughts on the matter. 800-838-3760 by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Any idea off the top of your head, Penny, who's voting on this besides Jackson County in this election?
Oh, yes, right. So this is actually going to be, it's on the ballot in Lincoln County, as you said, Jackson, Columbia, Klamath, Yamhill, Lynn, and Douglas. Douglas County, it was interesting, Douglas County was actually just directly placed on the November 2018 ballot by fiat by the Douglas County Commissioners. There wasn't a petition process. The initiative petitions were either denied or failed to gather required signatures in Benton, Crook, Deschutes, Grant, Harney, and Jefferson counties. So they will not be on there.
So what's that, five counties that just said, no, we're not going to put it, there's just not enough people signed the petitions to put it on the ballot?
For example, like Deschutes County and Grant County, the county government took a look at it and said, this is not constitutional. You can't put this on the ballot. Others simply did not gather enough signatures. So it's Benton, Crook, Deschutes, Grant, Harney, Jefferson. So those are the six that will not have a Second Amendment protection order. The ones that will have a Second Amendment protection order are Lincoln, Jackson, Columbia, Klamath, Yamhill, Lynn, and Douglas. So those are seven.
All right, so Jackson, Klamath, and Douglas right in our own region, sure.
Yes, exactly. And again, the Douglas was just put on by fiat, by the county commissioners. So SAPs are already on the books in Coos, Wheeler, and Willow County. So those three.
All right, so so has there been any legal challenge, for example, in the three that already have these ordinances?
I do know that the Attorney General's office is aware of these. But I do not know of a legal challenge, and part of it is you have to have legal standing for that in that county.
All right. So what do you see happening then? I mean, if a number of these other counties pass these, and particularly in Douglas, where the commissioners just put it straight to the ballot without requiring any sort of initiative campaign, have there been challenges to the ones that are there already, and do you see more challenges coming if more of these pass in this November election?
Yeah, I mean, there will need to be challenges because at some point, for example, if the sheriff decides that and in this particular case, they are all he, they're all men, decide to not follow up basically on SB 941, which is the universal background checks law. Someone sells a gun to a felon has a firearm, that felon uses the firearm to commit a crime. The sheriff should go back to determine how the felon was armed. And bring charges, if applicable, to the person who armed that felon. Is that person going to do that? The sheriff going to do that? I don't know. That might be a situation where you have standing. But there's a broader concern here because these SAPs really damage the power balance within the branches of government. As you know, we've got the three branches of government, right? But these SAPs will actually usurp power from the legislative and the judicial branches. And that really leaves citizens unsure of who's running the government.
SAPs that power, you mean by having the sheriffs be the ones to decide what's legal and what's not?
Right. The sheriffs can decide. They can actually, instead of being an executive branch, they can decide that they are a legislative branch or they're the judicial branch. They're going to make law or they're going to interpret laws a certain way. And that's not their position. That's not the power they have. That power to interpret the Constitution lies within the judicial branch. And the power to create laws lies within the legislative branch. So they're really usurping power, within those branches. And if a sheriff interprets the law, as I was alluding to before, to whom does a citizen aggress grievances? Who's going to have checks on the county sheriff? Mm-hmm. The county sheriff to determine the constitutionally of all the cases of the U.S. Supreme Court, just specific, what cases is he going to, take a look at? And then in addition, is this going to expand? Is the sheriff going to decide that he can disallow immigration, abortion, voting, where does it end?
So I'm sure there are a few people who might hear what we're talking about here and decide that, you know what, I realize this thing doesn't really have a chance to be potentially upheld long term, but I want to send a message. I want to send a message that I think gun regulations are too onerous, so I'm going to vote yes on this. What would you say to a person coming at you with that discussion?
I would say that I understand what the person is. I understand what they're trying to say, but to support this really is to chip away at that person's own rights and to give a county sheriff far more power than that county sheriff is allowed to have by law. If the person is really concerned about the gun laws, and then the process is to go to your state legislature, whether it's with your state senator or your state representative, and talk to that person about the laws you're concerned about and what laws can or cannot be passed to address that person's concerns. But this is a really good time for me to remind people that the media, and actually not your medium, not Jefferson Public Radio, you're always great on this issue, but too much of the media likes to increase the number of clicks by saying there's a big divide between one side and the other side. And that's actually not really true. We find that gun owners and non-gun owners actually have a lot in common and a lot of common ground and really agree on a lot of gun laws. And one of the most obvious is polling that shows, and this is polling from many different places. I'm going to cite the Quinnipiac poll from February 2018 that shows that 97% of gun owners and 97% of non-gun owners support background checks for all gun sales. I mean, this is nationwide. This isn't just Oregon. So it's going to be rare to find a gun owner who says, no, we shouldn't have background checks for gun sales because we know that they work.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we will see what happens when the counties that vote, and that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, I see, are voting, including Jackson, Klamath, and Douglas in our region, vote on these Second Amendment protection ordinances, or SAPs, as some people call them. In Jackson County, it's 15-181, the Right to Bear Arms Amendment. We've been talking to Penny Okamoto, the Executive Director of Ceasefire Oregon. Penny, thanks for joining us once again.
Thank you so much.